Happy holidays from the Garden Conversation team. We want to give you again this year the gift of enjoying some of the creative work of our writers here in town that also happen to be gardeners. We're going to start out from Mandy Ramsey, who is going to read three poems from her recent book that has just been published recently of Grow Where You're Planted. And be prepared to be transported back to some moments in your own garden or maybe a friend's garden with her reading. And then finally, her third poem is, I think, a beautiful perspective on winter from a gardener's perspective. Then we'll hear from Debbie Knight Kennedy, who is going to share some of her writing about her childhood memories of gardening and her mother. And I really love how writing inspires us to reflect on our own experiences and how they form us to be who we are. And then finally, we're going to end with enjoying Rebecca Brewer's earthy sense of humor. We gardeners can extend our holiday cheer and goodness even to those pests and varmints who plague us and irritate us. Happy holidays to everyone, and I hope that you are having a wonderful holiday time wherever you are and whoever you are with.
Hi, I'm Mandy Ramsey, and I'm honored that Mardell asked me to share some poetry for the Garden Conversation. I have three pieces I'd like to share, and the first one is entitled The Garden Gate. The gate that covers the threshold of the garden of my heart is woven with sweet orange honeysuckle, wild pink roses, wild sage, purple moonflower, a handful of starlight, a golden sunset, a child's laughter, and a hint of chocolate. As I walk in the world, this tapestry of beauty serves as a net to filter out and protect while nourishing this sacred space of the garden of my heart. Sometimes the world gets too heavy, though. Bad news, an unkind action of another, a betrayal of a friend. And these seeds of suffering slip through the gate and try to plant themselves in this sacred garden. The practice is to have the courage and the presence to open the door, take out my flashlight, and shine the light of my awareness on this inner landscape and pluck the seeds before they take root and become weeds in the sweet garden of my heart. The next piece is Peony. A peony blossom shines when it's her time, like a guitar solo. Her green stem reaches for the sky, a gentle melody introducing the star. Her bud begins to swell and grow, a tight ball forming at the top of her long, slender stem. The garden audience watches and waits as the next players march in, the ants. They slowly dance their way up her sturdy stem, playing her slowly as they reach the final destination of her large, swollen bud. Two melodies simultaneously playing their own solos, they weave their songs and build to the peak, revealing a delicate, layered blossom, unfurling one note at a time. Winter Reflection. I remind myself this will not be forever. The tides will turn. The seasons will shift. I hold on to this thought as I trudge through dark mornings, navigating icy roads, silver spikes on my shoes to walk up my driveway, the lone beam of my light of headlamp to lead the way. My sweet 7-year-old daughter, Lily, asks, Mama, I'm confused. Is it day or is it nighttime? It's day, my love, I answer. Mama, will spring ever come? She asks. During these days of waiting, we search the garden through frosty brown leaves, matted like stiff, wet brown paper bags, looking for signs of new growth, fresh shoots of daffodils or tulips, or possibly the bright purple crocus that ignite joy if they indeed have arrived. We look like frenzied treasure hunters, with an inner knowing that this Alaskan winter must end sometime soon. There must be signs of life stirring beneath this snow. And then it happens. One day you feel the shift in the air. The light returns. Each day ice melts a little more, and the trickle of water melting is music in the air. An urge comes to expand from the indoor cocoon near the fire, and I leave the comfort of my endless warm pots of tea, and I venture outside. The smell of cottonwood buds is a perfume so sweet, I want to roll in it, bottle it. It makes me smile. And something in me softens. Something that had been bracing through all those hard winter months begins to let go. As I feel this shimmer of light through the darkness, a speck of joy ignites my light and rekindles my fire that has gone tired and dim. The wait is over. Spring has arrived.
The Princess and the Bean. One of the many things I failed to appreciate about my mother was her garden. I failed to even see that it was a garden. Nothing more than patches of lawn bordered by salal and Oregon grape. How Pacific Northwest. For dramatic flair, she counted on shrubbery. I ask you, could there truly be anything less exciting than shrubbery? I longed for an English cottage look, all hollyhocks and snapdragons, cobblestone walkways and rose-covered arbors. All that green was so boring, so normal. Even the house was painted green. She did make one concession to color. For a few weeks each summer, I soaked up the temporary splashiness of the two small fuchsia bushes next to our house. I like to bite the ends off their hot pink and purple flowers and suck what nectar there was to be sucked. My grandpa had rows of berries in his yard, raspberries, strawberries, blueberries, boysenberries. He grew potatoes and unidentified leafy greens. Best of all were his pole beans that crept up teepee-like structures. When the stalks were big enough, you could crawl inside and disappear. The summer I turned 11, I begged my mom to let me have my own vegetable garden. I had it all figured out, exactly which section of lawn I would dig up, the fence I would need to keep the neighborhood dogs out. I would grow food, I promised, save her money on groceries, I vowed. She would be the envy of all her friends, I cajoled. No, absolutely not. We'll look like poor dirt farmers, she said, and I like my shrubberies. A small garden? No. I'll skip the fence. No. Only your favorite vegetables? No. How about just one bean? Could I just plant one bean in the backyard behind the shed where nobody will see it, please? I suppose, she said, as long as you don't bother the shrubbery. The previous year, I had studied photosynthesis in school. Each fifth grader received a different packet of seeds. We sprouted our seeds in moist paper towels, planted them in waxed paper cups, and watered them until they grew into healthy seedlings. Half the class placed their plants in a large cardboard box, while the other half remained on the windowsill. Every day we charted progress. My plant was a bean, a cascade giant pole bean. It had drawn the box lot. I watched and took notes while it slowly failed to thrive and died. I apparently missed the point of the experiment and considered it a defeat. I did, however, hold on to the three remaining seeds in my packet. That summer, I was ready to redeem myself in my own micro garden at home. Of the three, one of my beans survived. It was a beauty. There behind my mom's tool shed, it grew taller and taller and loaded up with bright purple flowers. As they fell off, tiny beans appeared. For unknown reasons, all except one remained small. But that one bean grew and grew until it achieved the glorious length of 17 and a half inches. It was bright green with lovely purple splotches. Even my mother was impressed. We harvested it, sliced it up, and boiled it until the splotches matched the rest of its skin. Buttered, salted, peppered, it was the finest bean I've ever eaten. After the success of my one glorious bean, I lost all interest in gardening. Imagine that. My mother had known what she was doing in refusing to let me dig up her lawn and bother her shrubberies. 50 years later, I look back and admire her readiness to take a stand to protect her personal kingdom. I have grown to understand that our parents are and should be sovereigns of their realm. They have earned that privilege. Childhood is not party to democracy. My mom was rightly queen of her suburban castle. As a child, I was always pestering her to paint our house a different color, buy newer, cooler furniture, change this, change that, as if I knew what I was talking about. I've since learned to respect my mother's strengths, including her stubborn love of shrubbery, and to forgive and forget perceived weakness, to know that they were just that, my perceptions of weakness.
Hello, this is Rebecca Brewer, and this is "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." "'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, except for the mouse in my root cellar. The onions were hung in their mesh bags with care, the garlic in braids with no room to spare. The squash were all nestled, all snug in their beds, while visions of German butterballs danced in their heads. With my dog in his kerchief and I in my cap, we had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When down in the cellar arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. I flew down the ladder and opened the hatch, with the knowledge that varmints were eating my stash. In the pitch-dark cellar, where the air was cool, I questioned myself, was I being a fool? When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature ermine and 8 tiny ermine ears. A sleek white mother so lively and quick, her tail stood straight up with black on its tip. With her eyes all twinkling, dark and fierce, her sharp little fangs did threaten to pierce. But with a wink of her eye and a twist of her head, she soon let me know I had nothing to dread. So up to the top shelf the ermine she flew, with agility and grace, and her 4 children too. In the twinkling of my headlamp, I pondered my plight. I thought of a live trap. I considered plain flight. As I drew in my head and was turning around, the brown eyes were on me and no other sound. Should I go get the broom or load my 22? Should I let them nest like a happy little crew? I pondered my options and the true Christmas spirit. With my heart all aglow, I decided to not fear it. So up to the kitchen with determination I went. My good dog on my heels and my headlamp spent, I fired up the stove and threw on the pan. If you were cooking for ermine, what would be your plan? I curried the carrots, the mashed potatoes I beat, but those critters weren't vegan, they wanted meat. To the freezer I went, like a jolly old elf, and I pulled out the deer ribs in spite of myself. Their eyes, how they twinkled, their dimples, how merry, their cheeks were like roses, their noses like cherries. Their droll little mouths turned up like bows, the beards on their chins as white as the snow. With potatoes and meat we filled our round bellies, and we shook when we laughed like bowls full of jelly. As the snow swirled down, the wind howled from the east, the ermine family and I ate a grand Christmas feast.